Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover Psalms chapter 53, which I will entitle, There Is None Who Does Good. The heading of this psalm says this, For the director of music, according to Mahalath, a maskil of David. Well, this is a Davidic psalm. Mahalath, the NIV note says, is probably a musical term. Maskil, the NIV note says, is probably a literary or musical term. In other words, nobody knows. Now, Psalms 53 is essentially a copy of Psalm 14, which is also a psalm of David. The first four verses of both those psalms, Psalms 53 and Psalms 14, are essentially the same. And then verse 6 of this psalm, 53, is essentially the same as Psalms 14:7. The only passages that are different, in Psalms 14, you got verses 5 and 6, which are not here in Psalm 53. And in Psalm 53, you have verse 5, which is not in Psalm 14. So they are similar, but not exact. The two psalms use different words for God. Psalms 14 uses Yahweh, YHWH, the Tetragrammaton, the Hebrew word which is translated capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D in almost all English translations. That term emphasizes God as the covenant God of Israel. Psalms 53 uses Elohim, the plural of El. El is God, Elohim is gods, but when it's talking about Yahweh, it refers to God as in God the Father, probably because Elohim allows for the Trinity because it's plural. The term Elohim emphasizes God as creator as opposed to the covenant God. Yahweh emphasizes God as the covenant God of Israel. Elohim emphasizes God as the creator of the world. Now, why do the two psalms use two different words? The NIV Study Bible suggests that Psalms 53 was written centuries after Psalms 14, and so by that time many regarded Yahweh as more than just the covenant God of Israel. Elohim is the God of all of creation, everybody on the earth. That's a reasonable speculation, I guess. Another option is that David revised Psalm 14 for practical reasons when he wrote Psalm 53, perhaps to fit a different melody, to use on a different occasion, for whatever reason, two different words are used for God. Now, verse 1 of this psalm, there's only six verses in this psalm. Verse 1 says, The fool says in his heart, God does not exist. As we're more used to hearing it, the fool in his heart says there is no God. This is the famous verse that Christian apologists use to point out that atheists are fools. It's quoted all the time. Atheists really are fools. You got to look at the stars and say, oh, you know, there's no God up there to create the stars. Well, all right there, that labels you as a fool, because only a fool could look at the stars and say there's no God behind those stars. Now, was David referring to atheist? The fool says in his heart God does not exist. Well, let's make some comments about the word fools. First of all, the Hebrew words rendered fool in Psalms denote one who is morally deficient. That's the NIV marginal note. Now, we tend to take fool as someone who is intellectually deficient, but the Jews, the Hebrews, when they said fool, they meant somebody who is morally deficient. The emphasis is on moral shortcomings. Adam Clark says, a fool is one who has a, quote, muddy head and an unclean heart. He puts both intellect and heart, morals, together. Muddy head and an unclean heart. Ooh, that's a nice thing to call an atheist. But was David talking about atheist? The problem is that there have not been very many people who have completely denied the existence of God. But David in verse 3 says, all have turned away. And he's, of course, referring to the same people who said in his heart that God does not exist. All have turned away. Everybody's an atheist? Probably not. More people are idolaters than atheists. So there's an argument that this verse is being sort of improperly used by apologists who refer it to atheist. Perhaps David is talking about deist, people who don't deny God's existence, but they deny his providence. They give him nothing to do. They give God no world to govern. He's just up there, and the world tootles along according to its natural laws. Well, I don't think deists existed back in David's time. There were a lot of them in the 1800s in America, for example, but I don't think so in David's time, so I don't think that David was referring to deists. How about option number 3? Was David referring to those who acknowledge God's existence and his providence? In other words, they are not atheists denying God's existence. They're not deists denying God's providence, but they deny God in their lives and in their actions. So what the fool would be saying was, God does not exist as far as I'm concerned. as far as how I live my life. Now, there are lots and lots of those types of people, and that would make more sense when we get down to verse 3, and David says, all have turned away. Because you look around, almost everybody is like that. They're walking according to their own lights, according to their own desires, their own plans, their own worldview. They don't care about God. He doesn't exist as far as they're concerned. Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not really sure who David was talking about here. I believe option number 3 is the best option. The fool is someone who lives his life apart from God and acting like he doesn't exist as far as his life is concerned. They are corrupt and they do vile deeds. There's no one who does good. No one? That might sound familiar. That's Romans 3:12. Paul says, all have turned away. All alike have become useless. There is no one who does what is good, not even one. Now, the NIV Study Bible says that when the psalmist says this, this is hyperbole because obviously there were people around who still followed God. And I think that makes sense. But the interesting thing is when Paul quotes that psalm in Romans 3:12, he is quoting it literally, not hyperbolically. Romans 3:12, Paul says, all have turned away, all alike have become useless. There is no one who does what is good, not even one. And basically, he's trying to say that the whole world is wrapped up into bondage to sin. He's not talking about it in general. He's not exaggerating. He's talking very literally. But that's okay. Apostles can quote the Old Testament however they want to and make it fit their situation however they want to. Verse 2 says, God looks down from heaven on the human race to see if there is one who is wise, one who seeks God. Well, that's an anthropomorphism. Obviously, God doesn't have to investigate to see if there's anybody who is wise. If there's anybody who seeks God, he knows everything instantly. So he's speaking like a human being would do if he were trying to look for somebody. And of course, it's very difficult because there isn't anybody that's wise. There are no people who seek for God because all have turned away. So David is contrasting the fool in verse 1 with the wise person in verse 2. The fool in verse 1 says God does not exist. The wise person in verse 2 seeks God. Verse 3, all have turned away, the fools. All alike have become corrupt. That word corrupt is translated by the King James as filthy. All are filthy. John Gill says all are like putrid and corrupt flesh. Adam Clark says that all are sour and rancid, a metaphor taken from milk. So atheist or deist or humanist, people who don't seek God, they're like rotten, nasty milk. If you ever smell rotten milk, rancid milk, it is really nasty. That's what they are, corrupt. This is how Paul describes the human race. I love this. Compare this to the typical non-Christian humanist or leftist. For example, John Dewey, mankind is basically good. How about Kongzi, Confucius in China? Mankind is basically good. How about Mao Zedong? How about Karl Marx? Mankind is basically good. Basically good as they go out and create hell on earth for everybody. Verse 4, will evildoers never understand? They consume my people as they consume bread. They do not call on God. So David again is, of course, concerned. So God is here concerned with his people. They consume my people, capital M, in the Holman Christian Study Bible. I wonder why the my could not refer to David if you made it a little m. Well, whoever it is, it's the people of God, and they're being consumed, eaten like bread by these fools who say in their heart that God does not exist. These fools are chomping down on God's people. Sounds like America, having to deal with secular humanists, God-haters, filthy hearts who put children's pornography in the public libraries in my home state, as I just read in an email, a long list of pornographic garbage for little kids to read. Now notice in verse 3, David says, all have turned away. They've put their back to God's face. They are running away from God. Everyone has repressed the truth and unrighteousness. They know that God exists, but they don't want to look at him, so they turn their back on him and they run away from him. Well, in verse 4, David says, will evildoers never understand? It's a rhetorical question, the answer to which is no, they're not going to understand. We go down to Psalms 53, verse 5. Now, verse 5 is composed of mostly words which have been added to Psalms 14, verses 5 through 6. Psalm 14, starting in verse 5, says, there they are in great dread. Psalm 53 verse 5 says, "There they were in great fear, where no fear had been. For God scattered the bones of him who encamped against you. You put them to shame because God had rejected them." The people who are in great fear are the atheist, or the fool who says in his heart there is no God, whoever that might be. They were in great fear when they weren't afraid before, for God scattered the bones of those fools who said in their heart there is no God, those fools who encamped against God, who encamped against the people of Israel, the saints. But you, God, put these fools to shame because God has rejected them. Atheists are pretty cocky about their prospects on earth. This verse says they were in great fear, these fools, where no fear had been. They weren't afraid because, we've got this life to live and we can make the world a beautiful place and there's not a problem. With dying, we'll just go to sleep. We go now to Psalms 53, verse 6. David continues, "Oh, that the salvation of Israel would come out of Zion. When God restores his captive people, let Jacob rejoice, let Israel be glad." Now, verse 6 is the exact same verse as Psalms 14, 7. When will Jacob rejoice? When will Israel rejoice? When God restores his captive people? When did that happen? Well, we don't know. The NIV Study Bible says this is a generic prayer that would fit numerous situations in Israel's history. It's a general reference without any specific referent. Jameson Fawcett and Brown says it's a restoration from any great evil. And I think that makes sense. Some people say it could be God restoring his people after the Babylonian captivity, which would make this verse a prophecy because David obviously lived long before the Babylonian captivity. I don't believe it's a prophecy. I believe David is referring to God restoring his people. It could be referring to God restoring the people of Israel after Absalom's rebellion. It could refer to the situation when the Arameans abandoned the siege of Samaria, when they herd chariots and horses when there were none. The NIV Study Bible suggests this is a possibility. This is in 2 Kings 7, 6 and 7. "For the Lord had caused the army of the Arameans to hear a sound of chariots and a sound of horses, even the sound of a great army, so that they said to one another, Behold, the king of Israel has hired against us the kings of the Hittites and the kings of the Egyptians to come upon us. Therefore they arose and fled in the twilight and left their tents and their horses and their donkeys, even the camp, just as it was, and fled for their life." The Arameans, of course, were Syrians. Well, we can be particular about it, but I just think when God restores his captive people, it could be anything, including all of the examples I gave you, just in general. When God restores his captive people, good application there. When God restores the Church of Christ in the New Testament, will the New Testament Israel, the New Testament Jacob, will we rejoice? Oh, yes, we will. "Let Israel be glad," the psalmist says. David says, as is usual with the book of Psalms in general and also with David in particular, this psalm ends up on a very happy note. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Psalm 53. We're prepared now to go to our next psalm, which is Psalm 54, verses 1 through 7, which I will entitle, "The Lord Upholds My Life." I hope you enjoyed this audio and I hope you stay tuned for the next one.